Backseat Book Club, Book 22, Rainbow's End by Werner Vinge.
Hey, this is Scott.
This is Jim.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Book Club. We got books and stuff. We might need, yeah. So how you been?
Pretty good. Just getting over a cold, dealing with children. Children have colds. There's lots of snot in the house.
Yeah, I get that. It goes around the whole house every time.
Yeah.
See, everyone in my house has left me alone, except for the dogs. They aren't much for conversation. What do you think about books, Brutus? He looked up at me. That's about it.
My cat Matt likes to sleep on books. Yeah, my roommate back in university took a great picture of me studying. I've been studying for my textbook, and then Matt went and laid down the textbook, and so I just fell asleep face down too.
Sometimes that's how you go. My roommate had a cat that was particularly attracted to my philosophy textbooks for napping spaces.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it is. The cat liked to sleep on top of Nietzsche, though. Maybe cats appreciate the death of God.
Maybe.
Mm. I think cats and Germans have a lot in common.
Do they?
I think so.
I don't know. I mean, I think of Germans, I think of order and efficiency. I think of cats, those aren't really the words sort of mine. More like, you know, lazy and entitled.
All right. So our book for this week is Rainbow's End by Werner Vinge. Please note that the title has no apostrophe for some reason.
Well, I mean, that's called out in the book.
It does. It still doesn't come up. It still doesn't track as being, like, particularly symbolic.
No, it didn't. It didn't seem to really get any closure on ultimately why there's no apostrophe. There is a chapter, I think, titled something like "Why There's No Apostrophe" or something, but maybe at the end. But it didn't really clear anything up for me.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, I would have just let it sort of. That isn't even something I would call out if I was writing this. I would just have it be there, and just if the reader gets it, they get it. It's like The Wasteland by what's the poem?
Eliot?
Yeah, T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. It's two words that's different from, you know, your typical wasteland.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm sure you could write a whole now someone is going to write a whole paper about just that space, which is probably perfect. Oh yeah, it's probably out there. It's a perfectly valid thing to do in poetry class. Discuss spacing.
Sure. We got a poet in the book, too.
Yes. That's our transition. As
Segue.
All up ends. Okay, so plot summary is that Mr. Robert Goo, Alzheimer's patient of the not-too-distant future, wakes up one day to realize that, hey, it's the not-too-distant future, and they have cured Alzheimer's and also most of the worst bits of being old. And then he gets involved in a crazy AI government conspiracy about the UC San Diego library and a research lab and his daughter-in-law whose brain's been hacked too many times. There are two novels here. And I only liked one of them is basically what it comes down to for me. Because you have just this personal story about Robert reconnecting with his family and sort of discovering life in the future, having sort of missed a lot of the intervening steps and just dealing with his family and stuff. And then you have this crazy, the crazy snow crash part that gets hard to follow and I don't think gets exposited well enough in a couple of cases.
Yeah, well, there is some strangeness about the exposition. Like, I was reading through the first chapter or so, and then I was confused, but I figured, okay, it makes sense. They're just, either authors teasing me along, getting me interested, and I am interested. And then there's a big lack of exposition where they basically just, the author outlined all the stakes and risks. They just, the people were concerned about, well, what if this guy's not smart enough to pull it off? And I think that he could have easily left unsaid, what if he's too smart and goes the other way? But just right out there on the page, well, what if he's too smart? And then the chapter ends. So obviously we know that's how it's going to go.
Yeah.
And just the book seems to give away too much sometimes and then not really give away enough later.
And I thought this, and there was part of me that was reading it that as I was going through, it's like, okay, this is just sequel fodder, right? He's going to pull, Vinji here is going to pull a William Gibson and have some of these characters come back in a sequel, and it will tie back thematically and with a few dingling plot points, and it'll be awesome. It'll be like reading Mona Lisa Overdrive. And then, no real plans for a sequel announced. And I'm like, well then, yeah. I've just got a bunch of dangling shit.
Yeah, there is a bunch of dangling stuff. And it's very strange because, especially about the mystery about what is Rabbit, there are a few points near the end of the book where the characters have figured it out, and they're saying, oh, well, it was the carrot greens that gave it away. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I remember the carrot greens, but that doesn't tell me anything. Really, I mean, like, I understand that what the carrot greens mean that he was, Rabbit was able to get where he shouldn't have been able to get, but it doesn't tell me what Rabbit is. I still have no idea.
Like, if it was supposed to be Lena, then it's really weird because, there's part of me that wants to think it was a twist that it was Robert's ex-wife the whole time, except then it's like, why is she playing the physicist and her granddaughter against the middle and against herself? It doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's it.
I mean, if it was just an AI the way the British and eight Japanese spies seem to think he is, then okay. Do something about the AI then.
Yeah, but the Indian guy who knew more than anybody says explicitly in one of his chapters that it's not an AI, but it is the next big thing. So he's the guy, he's the one who's figured out what it is, but he's not telling us. But he does say it's not an AI. I think it's kids. I think it's some sort of aggregate of tech savvy youngsters. But
it's just like Wikipedia. Wikipedia has gained sentience?
Something like that. I don't know. But it could. I don't really have any evidence to back that up. That's just my guess.
Yeah. Okay. And
I don't know if I'd say Wikipedia. Maybe Reddit or something.
I don't know. I think it's a little too organized for Reddit. Maybe it's Twitch Plays Pokemon. Maybe maybe by the future they will have advanced to the point where
Twitch Plays Terrorism or something?
Twitch Plays Corporate Espionage. What I feel about this book really does come down to the fact that it is two books. And there's a lot. I guess I'll mention now that this was chosen at random thanks to the Goodreads recommendations algorithm. And I'm fine with it. I'm actually glad. I think it picked something that was in our very much in our wheelhouse, which is more than I can say for other sorting algorithms out there. But most of my feelings about this book come down to the fact that it's like, I really like the futurism. I like the arc of Robert Goo. And I'm just sort of like, all this snow crashy stuff didn't need to be here for me. And I love cyberpunk, but it's like, no, this could have been a nice, small, little post-cyberpunk story about old guys in the future. And it's old guys in the future who fight spies for some reason.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's sort of what Werner Vinge has done in the other books I've read, though. He's had A Fire Upon the Deep, where there's the best parts are the Tines and how they interact and how they deal with new technology arriving on their planet. And there is this overarching Save the Universe story going along with it that, really isn't, well, it's not the best part of the book, let's say. the best part is the smaller part, the smaller story.
Yeah, and I did call out Goodreads as the sorting hat powers because Robert Goo is a fucking dick. Like, he is the most colossal asshole I think we've seen.
Yeah.
Like they introduce, part of the thing is they jump.
He's got some competition there, but yeah.
There's some competition up there. I mean, Kugel is also a bastard. But like, a big chunk of this is from Robert's perspective, and they introduce that he used to be a real browbeating jerk before he, turned into a vegetable in a chapter from his son's perspective. And then you see Robert just sort of casually thinking, this girl's getting too uppity. I gotta smack her down. Like, almost exactly that phrase. And I'm like, wow. And half his narration is just belittling all the people around him and the concept of grad students. And it's just like, wow, this is a little uncomfortable. Not that I didn't like it. I'm just like, this is much more deliberate assholishness than the ignorant selfishness I am used to.
Yeah. Yep, definitely deliberate. But I guess his arc takes him out of that and into being sort of a normal person.
Well, I think
at the end,
like, I can definitely see there's something of an arc where, because he's stuck trying to adapt to the future, he's been humbled and has to relearn a lot of really basic things.
Yeah.
But, even at the end of it, he's still a tool. It's not like, I've come to respect everyone via my saving the world and getting involved in a giant forum flame war / LARP. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't, it's true, but it seems like he loses the ability to really get at people as the way he could before his Alzheimer's, and by the end of the book, he seems like he's okay with that loss, and he doesn't really want to be that much of an ass.
Yeah, I mean,
anymore.
There's an interesting implication, what cured his Alzheimer's couldn't fully restore what was lost, so he can no longer create poetry. And there's almost this implication that that was part, like, his assholishness was also part of his creative process.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there is this thread that, but he does have new interests and things that he wouldn't have been interested in before, sort of almost like compensation for losing the poetry. And I'm not sure if that's just supposed to be because of the new plasticity that his treatment has given him, or if it's just a personality change.
Yeah, I mean, again, there are a lot of big ideas here that, you could explore with, even little things in here, like the augmented reality, the fan-created augmented reality layers of certain areas that you could explore much more fully. And I would not say no to more from this setting, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree. The setting's good. I was really, really into it. I would like to see a sequel. Yeah, there were a couple of threads I was picking up on, and just not in terms of things that I read, but things that weren't there. Now, the first one was that there were, like, no animals in the book up until, except for the ones that were being experimented on, up until, like, the very end. Near the very end, he hears some insect sounds, or someone hears some insect sounds, and near the very end, they mention that Miri isn't interested in pets. But up until that point, I don't think there were any animals mentioned at all, and I was starting to wonder if, humanity had made everything go extinct.
That there was a bit of a do androids vein running there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, even still, the only animals were insects and mice to be experimented on. So we could have made everything extinct in this vision of the future.
We could have.
I...
Absence of evidence is evidence of absence.
Normally when you're reading a book, like, there's bird song or something in the morning, there's an animal get mentioned at some point.
And you're at you're in San Diego. People have dogs. There's green space there.
Well, I don't know if there's green space anymore in this book, right?
Well, they describe a park that, it's Pyramid Hill, and I guess...
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right.
They do describe parkland, but the only animals in it are, like, little furry robot guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they're artificial. And the other thing I was noticing the lack of was poor people.
Well, there's this weird thing. Like, they do explain that a lot of the... Not necessarily explain, but allude to the idea that there are a lot of people who don't have jobs.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, like, in the future we will have a much better welfare state. You know, welfare will be much more equitable and you'll be able to get by just fine without an actual job, or if it's
just
like... Yeah,
I wasn't sure if it was post-scarcity like that, or if it was just the poor people. They're not connected well enough, so...
They may as well be invisible?
We don't even get to hear about them. You look at the people who got the Alzheimer's treatments, the old people who came back, you've got a former dean, you have a former engineering superstar who invented, you know, some of the inventions that the whole modern world runs on, and you have the best poet in history, apparently, or according to some, at least.
Yeah.
And those are the people we see coming back from Alzheimer's treatments. And so you wonder, well, surely poor people get Alzheimer's, too.
Maybe this future is much more dystopian. Maybe all the poor people just get shoved in a big pit somewhere.
Maybe. You wouldn't know one way or the other.
Yeah, that is not a thing that is explored. Although, props to Vinji here for... creating a character who is supposedly the most brilliant poet ever, and then taking away that power specifically so he doesn't have to pretend to be the best poet ever.
Right. Yeah. It was fairly clever.
That is how you do it, people. That is how you write.
Attempt to write any poetry,
or no serious attempts.
Right, I mean, they describe the book describes him reciting his poetry, but it doesn't actually transcribe his poetry. Right, there's never any place where there's, you know, a block of text, blocked off words, a poem.
Yeah, there are no Tolkien moments here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting how, getting back to the ideas, it does capture a certain amount of the ideas in going on right now. Like, I know, like, every time people talk about a bookstore closing, because Toronto has lost 6 in 6 months, disappointingly.
Mm-hmm.
It does always come down to, oh man, e-readers are evil, except they're kind of not, except, oh man, publishers are being dicks to their writers even more so, except then Amazon is even being a bigger dick to publishers, and I feel like that didn't come across. It was mostly just this recurring thing that the Geisel Library was being torn to all the books were being shredded down to nothing and then digitized, and this is apparently the worst thing ever. Except if anyone's been in a university library, you're like, man, these guys could use some more space. They should digitize their back catalogs somehow.
Yeah, I mean, finding things is hard in a real library. With digital, a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine trying to find journal articles without all the fancy pants journal search engines that come with a university library now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would just go bug the librarian and get them to do it for me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to go searching through everything.
I'd try, and then I'd be like, no.
Well, you might try once, but then the next few years,
yeah, I would
you have to do it, you just ask the librarian.
I would try it once, and then I would just start bugging librarians for it.
Yeah. That's what they're paid to do.
That is their specialty.
Make them work for their money.
And see, here's the interesting thing. I feel like, Werner has missed a chance here because for some reason, every debate about e-reading always comes down to, well, you can't take a tablet into the bath. Like, somehow the majority of the population do most of their reading while in the tub. Like, that is the end-all be-all. And I would have loved to have had just a little snarky moment where the smart paper is totally waterproof and fine. For the record, you can't take a tablet into the bath. You just put it...
you can totally do it as long as you don't drop it.
Oh, you can put it in a Ziploc bag!
You could do that too, yeah?
It totally works. The haptics still function. Yeah. That is something that just has started bugging me whenever I see something about e-readers on the internet. It always comes down to I can't have it in the bath. And I'm like, well, just read on the toilet then.
Yeah.
Okay, so other characters, we have Robert Gu Jr., who is a pretty high-ranking mucky-muck in the Marines, and he's really boring.
Yeah, he's really boring. Like, there's nothing to him at all.
Like,
there's
honestly, nothing. His perspective chapters are just like, hey, if you weren't sure Robert Sr. was an asshole, I'm going to reinforce it. Not so much with examples, but just his particular interpretation of events.
Yeah, he's just wary and grumpy about his father, and that's it. That's the extent of his character, until the very, very end where he comes down and rains death on things.
Yeah. Other characters are, we have Miri Gu, the granddaughter, who, you know, again, if in an ideal world, this would just be Robert reconnects with his family and his brain in the future, and Miri and Robert would be the only perspectives you had. And you build, then coming to an understanding.
Yeah, I was disappointed with one thing there, which was that there was a lot of times where Robert mentioned that I'm forgetting the grad student's name. What's the grad student's name?
Zufash something. Oh, God.
Zulfi?
Zulfi, yes.
Okay, Zulfi. So he mentioned that Zulfi was, you know, sometimes taken over by Robert, but sometimes also taken over by someone else, who we know is Miri. But we didn't get to actually see a lot of those conversations. And it wasn't obvious when he was having the what little conversations we got to see when it was Miri and when it was actually Zulfi.
Well, there are a couple of cases where you'll see something they'll see something from Miri's perspective where they will have a chat log running while also puppeting Zulfi.
Yeah.
And those I liked, actually.
I wanted more of that. That's what I'm saying, I think. I wanted more of that.
More of that. I also would have said yes to more Juan,
mm-hmm.
like the other major teen character of the novel, because it's like, no, this guy's kind of dumb, trying to figure out, kind of dumb, kind of a slacker, but, you know, just trying to figure out how to live in the future.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering about poor people, though, because I was wondering what were the stakes for Juan. If he just is a slacker, is that okay, or does he, you know, get thrown in the pit with the poors?
I mean,
that's what I was wondering with him. Like, if he does badly in college, is that a big deal for him?
I mean, and you see that he seems to be capable. Like, he's almost ready to make the jump to sort of remixing content for money. Like, they introduce him as like running hacks on Pyramid Hill and introducing new AI bots and things into the one of the augmented reality environments. And it's like, no, he's good at this one thing. He might be able to do that and be fine.
Yeah.
If doing that is a thing he has to do, again.
Yeah, that's why, what are the stakes? So what happens if he doesn't?
I mean, I think he got an A on his on the history
report.
Yeah,
the way he said it, he has people interested or whatever in his work. And
yeah.
He'll get a job, but yeah, I just wasn't sure what was really going on.
Well, and
what, you know, if Juan was scared that he, you know, really needed this, or if he was just hoping for it.
Yeah. That is another thing that does not come across. The other, and then you have Lena Gu, Robert's ex-wife, who you never totally learn the details of why she exactly, like, you know why, but you know, don't get the full story as to why their marriage collapsed, or even how the marriage started, or why she faked her own death, and is now, you know, sort of using Zhu Zhang as her little puppet out in the physical world. That felt like something that could have either been cut entirely or elaborated upon much more. And she doesn't even seem to have a dog in the fight at all.
I mean, she just wants... Yeah, it's weird. So she wants to stay away from Robert entirely. She just doesn't trust him. She doesn't trust him the entire book. She faked her own death so that he wouldn't get in touch with her. And then she can't help but watch him all the time. She's constantly surveilling him. So it's pretty strange. Is she just watching him to keep Miri safe, or is there something else going on?
And this is where the part where I thought there'd be a sequel that explained what she was actually up to and what her deal was. But here we are with just this, hey, that's an element. That's floating around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... One other thing that's just kind of floating there is the idea of just-in-time training, like the Matrix-style training method where they just overwrite skills into your brain, except it tends to break your brain if you even just add a language really fast, which has apparently happened to Robert's daughter-in-law like a dozen times, and it's destroyed her personality almost entirely. And I'm like, there's a whole story there. And now it, and here it's just like a plot, like just a little plot hanger on.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of the daughter-in-law, I'm trying to remember her name. What's her name?
Alice.
Alice, yeah, Alice Goop. Yeah, so Alice. Again, there are lots of hints dropped at you know, seeing a bit of what military life and espionage is like through her, because she's always distracted because she's walking around doing things around her home while she's at the same time escorting someone halfway across the world and having to keep you know, her accent straight and her languages straight and taking on different personas with different insignia on her uniform. She has to project the correct uniform, and she's doing all this, and it's, you know,
like she's a whole two-parter on Dollhouse waiting to happen.
Yeah, and there's just a lot there. They could be explored a lot more. You know, I guess the idea is she's the only one, or one of the only ones who can do this, who can take it, who can have all these different skills and keep them straight and not go crazy.
Again, these are like three or four ideas that all got thrown together, and nothing fully clicks. It's still an interesting read, I would say. I mean, the prose kept me engaged the whole time, even when we jumped to yet another new perspective, or God love it, the entire chapters that take place in spy chat rooms with really no blocking or any, or, you know, character emotes. Just, hey, we've got a Japanese spy and a British spy talking spy stuff about what's going on.
I mean, overall,
I would say I enjoyed it. What about you?
I'm pretty positive about it. It was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was pretty good. If you like William Gibson, you'll probably like it. The ideas are strong. The ideas really carry it.
This is much more about the ideas than any sort of one element of the story. I like the fact that this book dropped about 5 years ago and still doesn't feel dated yet.
Actually, no, not at all. Yeah.
Not more than five. I'm sorry, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is tough to do when you're in the near future. It feels pretty relevant right now, even.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else on anything in the book itself?
No, that was about it. I liked it.
All right. So, who would you say this book is for?
The book's great for people who just like to have a lot of interesting ideas and futurism in their stories. Like I say, it's, you know, if you like William Gibson, this is something you'll probably like too. William Gibson is the future from 20 years ago. This is the future from, you know, like you say, it's relevant today. It seems like a plausible near future now.
Well, even with William Gibson, you do have his Blue Ant trilogy, which, you know, feels like a future from today.
Mm-hmm.
I know he started writing it in like 2003, but it's still that still feels like it's got a bit of punch to it. Maybe because it's less about the tech and more about how we interact with a number of different ideas becoming more prevalent today. But I mean, if you're liking William Gibson's current stuff, definitely for that. I would actually say, if you are a fan of Ghost in the Shell standalone complex, like if you were looking for more of that, I think this is pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Minus, you know, the cute little death robots. All right, so that's us. We like it. We think you might. And next time we are reading Black Dog by Rachel Neumeier. It is young adult about werewolves. That is all I know.
Okay.
Sam picked it. All right, catch you next time.
All right, bye.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit backseatproducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.